And as we've been going through this survey, we've reached the time of Noah and the beginnings, you know, of the patriarchs as we begin to go through those, as we follow the line of Seth down to Noah and the events of Noah's life and everything. And, you know, as a child, I always enjoyed the story of Noah, the idea of, you know, having this really big boat and all these animals all around and everything. And, you know, I think my kids sometimes almost lived in an ark because we always had this animal or that animal that was there and present. And it's just kind of interesting to think of their time there in the ark and all that went on in that year that they were there. You know, when you look throughout the Old Testament, you can see that there are a number of things that are revealed in the Old Testament that are what's referred to as shadows or types of things to come. And so as I was studying on Noah and preparing for the class Wednesday and this coming Wednesday, thinking about these things and looking at them, my mind was kind of drawn to this. And if you look over in Colossians chapter 2, in Colossians chapter 2, I'll begin reading in verse 8. I'll be reading from the New American Standard Bible. Colossians chapter 2, there beginning in verse 8. Paul, writing to the Christians there in Colossae, he says, "See to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the tradition of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ. For in Him, all the fullness of deity dwells in bodily form. And in Him you have been made complete, and He is the head over all rule and authority. And in Him you were also circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, and the removal of the body of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, having been buried with Him in baptism, in which you were also raised up with Him through faith in the working of God who raised Him from the dead. When you were dead in your transgressions and the uncircumcision of your flesh, He made you alive together with Him, having forgiven us all our transgressions, having canceled out the certificate of debt consisting of decrees against us, which was hostile to us, and He has taken it out of the way, having nailed it to the cross. When He had disarmed the rulers and authorities, He made a public display of them, having triumphed over them through Him. Therefore, no one is to act as your judge in regard to food or drink or in respect to a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath day, things which are a mere shadow of what is to come, but the substance belongs to Christ." When you begin to understand the idea of shadows, then when you begin to read through the Old Testament, things start to jump out. And I mean, just think about it. We've already talked about it with Eve and the serpent, that we see there's this foretelling of the events of Jesus and the devil on the cross. And we'll see with Noah and the ark that these things are just shadows. They're types of what's going to come. You know, all salvation was there in Noah and in the ark. And we'll see that salvation is through Jesus and in the ark that He built, the church. With Abraham and Isaac, we can see that, you know, this is looking ahead as Abraham is told, you go and you sacrifice Isaac, the promised son. And he doesn't have to because he had that faith and he had that willingness and God knew that he was willing to do it. And this is all looking ahead to when God sacrificed, went through with the sacrifice of His son, that which was promised for all of mankind. So we can see over and over, and even if you look over in Hebrews chapter 9, the author of Hebrews refers to the tabernacle and the temple. This imperfect thing, this thing that's made with hands that was looking ahead to something that was better, something that was made without hands. If you look there in Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 6, it says, "Now when these things have been so prepared, the priest are continually entering the outer tabernacle, performing the divine worship. But into the second, only the high priest enters once a year, not without taking blood, which he offers for himself and for the sins of the people committed in ignorance. The Holy Spirit is signifying this, that the way into the holy place has not yet been disclosed while the outer tabernacle is still standing, which is a symbol for the present time. Accordingly, both gifts and sacrifices are offered, which cannot make the worshiper perfect in conscience, since they relate only to food and drink and various washings, regulations for the body imposed until a time of reformation. But when Christ appeared as a high priest of the good things to come, he entered through the greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this creation. We noted in our study of the book of Matthew that when Jesus died there on the cross, when he said, "It is finished," and he yielded up his spirit, there was a great earthquake and the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. Now this veil was that which separated the Holy of Holy Place, where only the high priest could enter once a year, and the rest of the temple. And this signifies exactly what the author of Hebrews is speaking of, that when that physical temple was no more, when that was removed, we have something so much better. And so all of those sacrifices, just think of it. Read in the days of Hezekiah and the amount of sacrifices they offered when they kept the Passover there. And later with Josiah, it was even more. All of these sacrifices were offered on a regular basis, and it's all done in the sacrifice of Jesus. And all of those sacrifices from the days of Cain and Abel all the way up till Christ's death on the cross were shadows of the sacrifice that Jesus offered. Now let's go back and look in the book of Genesis. And let's read here in what God has given Noah to do when we consider these things. There in Genesis chapter 6, let's begin reading there in verse 5. Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5. It says, "Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. The Lord said, 'I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to the birds of the sky, for I'm sorry that I have made them.' But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. These are the records of the generations of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his time. Noah walked with God. Noah became the father of three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in the sight of God, and the earth was filled with violence. God looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way upon the earth. Then God said to Noah, 'The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them, and behold, I am about to destroy them with the earth. Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. You shall make the ark with rooms and shall cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you shall make it: the length of the ark, 300 cubits, its breadth, 50 cubits, and its height, 30 cubits. You shall make a window for the ark and finish it to a cubit from the top, and set the door of the ark in the side of it. You shall make it with lower, second, and third decks. Behold, I am bringing the flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh, in which is the breath of life from under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall perish, but I will establish my covenant with you. And you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds after their kind and of the animals after their kind, of every creeping thing of the ground after its kind. Two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. As for you, take for yourself some of all food which is edible, and gather it to yourself, and it shall be food for you and for them.' Thus Noah did according to all that God had commanded him. So he did." We know the story of Noah and the ark. When you think about these things and all the preparation that goes into this, I mean, I don't even like having to go once a month to buy the dog food for the mass of dogs that we had. And it's better now that we don't have 20 or 30 chickens running around and have to go and get chicken feed for them. And here he's being told to gather together food for a year for him and his family and for all the animals that are in the ark with him. But when we read this, it's not just a story of an individual who built a really big boat. We see so much more is involved in this, and Peter references this in 1 Peter chapter 3. There in verse 20, the Apostle Peter writes and says that in these who were once disobedient with the patience of God kept waiting in the days of Noah during the construction of the ark, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were brought safely. You know what he says? Safely through the water. Corresponding to that, baptism now saves you, not the removal of dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Christ Jesus. Later in 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 5, Peter again references this salvation through Noah. He did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly. In both of these passages, Peter refers to Noah as a preacher of righteousness, one who built the ark, who labored in the building of this to save the world from the universal flood, and only eight were saved. And in this account, as was mentioned earlier, we see this beautiful grace that's offered through Noah. When God says, I'm tired of this world, I'm sorry, I repent that I even created these things, He says, Noah found favor in the eyes of God. God did not want to destroy His greatest creation, so He provided a way of salvation. And we see that in the story of Noah. And we see that repeated in the story of Jesus. And so this morning, and probably this afternoon as well, I want us to look at the ark itself and some of the lessons that can be learned from the ark and some of the applications that we can make from that to the Lord's church, the spiritual ark that we are a part of today. And the first thing we can see about the ark is that there was one designer and there was to be no alterations whatsoever. Again, you look there in Genesis chapter 6. There in verse 13, God says, I'm about to destroy the world because of the violence of the men that are therein. And He says in verse 14, make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. You shall make the ark with rooms and shall cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you shall make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits. Its breadth, 50 cubits. Its height, 30 cubits. You're going to put a window in there. You're going to put a door in the side. You're going to put three levels inside. Have you ever taken the time to measure out the size of the ark? Now, you can go up to, was in Kentucky, and you can go and you can see what's supposed to be a life-size representation. They take the directions that are given, and they do their best to present that. And looking at pictures of it, it is a much better representation of what is described here in the Scriptures than you find in most children's books, where it's, you know, a big, happy little boat, and there's windows all over the side, and animals poking their heads out and everything. And it looks more like a pleasure cruise than what it truly was. The ark, the Hebrew term that is used here, tabah, literally means chest, box, or coffin. And the idea here is it's just a great big barge. It's not a pleasure cruise. It's not some kind of a yacht. It's something that's there to haul things around, to keep these things afloat, to provide protection, and nothing more. And again, you're looking at 400 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. You see there it talks about having a window, and in the New American Standard Bible it reads that it's to be a top, about a cubit below the top. And what I, in the studies that I've read and trying to understand a little bit better, it's not a window like you look out that door, there's a window there. That's not what we're looking at. This is, some translations will refer to it as a covering. And the idea is something that can be raised up to allow air to be circulated. And so you can see with some of these depictions of ark, you know, you've got, it's more kind of a covering on top that's designed to be able to be lifted up. And so, you know, we look at these things and this door in the side wasn't an ocean liner. It was a large floating box. Now let's say Noah, given this charge to build this ark, and remember, there's one type of tree. He's to build it with gopher wood. It's to put pitch within and without, to seal in any of the holes, the cracks and such. Let's say the stand of gopher wood that's needed for all of this is 20 miles away. There's a nice stand of pine or birch or poplar right over here. Could Noah go off and go, you know, that's a long ways away. And there's some really nice trees over here that I've used to build my house or to work with. And I think it would be just fine if he had built the ark with birch, maple, pine, whatever. Would it have floated? Not for long. It'd have been like any other structure that might would have been able to float, that eventually it's all going to go down. When the fountains of the heavens of above and the fountains of the deep below are let loose and all of this torrent is rising, only that which is approved by God is going to remain afloat in all of these things. Let's say he's building and he's like, you know, I don't really think three stories are necessary. Let's just go with two. Or maybe if I give a fourth one, we could take another level just for us and we kind of cut off the smell of all these animals that are going to be here in the ark. That makes good sense, right? Is it going to stay up off the ground, stay up on the top of the water? God laid out the design. And there's some things that are left as leeway. I mean, as to how he creates the rooms inside on those three levels, there's no restrictions whatsoever. But if he goes against any of the design that God had given, there's one designer, and he has to follow that design. And one of the things that I want you to really take note about the life of Noah, look there in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 22. This is the notable thing to keep in mind about Noah. In the English Standard Version, it reads, Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. Everything God set out, all of the directions he was given, he followed through with it. He did everything according to the design that had been given to him. And God did a similar thing with the church, did he not? He laid out the design of the church, who's going to be at the head, how its hierarchy is going to work, how it's to function. The church is not some building with stained glass and a steeple and such. It's made up of the individuals, those who are saved individuals. In fact, the Greek term that we read there is the term ekklesia. And this is, I'm going to tell you, I had my dad as a teacher throughout most of my teen years. And this is the one thing I really took away from it. He just drilled it into us, I guess. Ekklesia just simply means a called out group of people. And this is used to refer to those who are Christians, who are called out unto Christ. The church is made up of people who have been separated from the world, separated to God. And the church also had specific instructions for its construction. Just like Noah was given, you're to build it this long, this high, this wide, use this wood, pitch it within and without, put three levels on the inside, put one covering and one door. We see that just as Noah was the only one given the instructions to build the ark, Christ is the primary builder of the church. If you look in Matthew chapter 16, there in verse 18, when Peter says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And he says, I also say to you that you're Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. And the gates of Hades will not prevail against it, will not overpower it. When you look throughout the writings of the Apostle Paul, we can see that he refers to Christ as that foundation, that cornerstone. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, there in verse 10, Paul says, according to the grace of God which was given to me, like a wise master builder, I laid a foundation, and another is building on it, but each man must be careful how he builds on it, for no man can lay a foundation other than the one which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. I've always had an interest in the historical side of things, and it's kind of interesting when you're reading about the building of the temple there in the days of Solomon. Have you ever really paid attention there when it's describing that building, that they had those from Hiram, the northern kingdom, that came and trained them in how to work with the cedars of Lebanon and with stone masonry, and that everything was cut in such a way that when it was put together, there was not the sound of a hammer in the building of the temple. This great care, great level of construction, this concern that everything was done in the most respectful manner. And you see that with the earthly temple. He carefully laid the foundation so that everything would be laid out in the way that it should be. And we see that Jesus Christ is our cornerstone. He has laid a foundation and we can't build on any other. It is only on that rock. Again, Christ says, upon this rock, Peter, this statement, this confession that you made that I am the Christ, the Son of the living God, I'm going to build my church. He is the foundation, and he is the one and the only head of the church. In Colossians chapter 1, then verse 18, we see he also is head of the body, the church, and he is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead. In Acts chapter 2, there in verse 47, we see that it's not man that is adding people to the church, but as those are obeying the gospel, those who are being saved, the Lord is adding them day by day. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 23, referencing the husband-wife relationship, Jesus is the head of the church, that bridegroom and the bride relationship. And again, we go back to Genesis chapter 6 and verse 22. Noah did this. All the instructions that God gave to him in the building of the ark, thus Noah did, according to everything God had commanded him. So he did. And we need to have that same mindset, that what God has given for us to do, we do. We don't add to, we don't take away. We follow that which God has instructed. And as we look further, we don't read anywhere in scriptures where there was any other individual who was given instructions to build an ark, do we? The whole world, the thoughts and intents of the world were only evil continually. And the only one that's a bright spot in the midst of all this is that Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. And so God told Noah, I'm going to destroy the world, but you are the method of salvation. He didn't say go out and build arks. He said you make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. Now let me tell you, as a sibling to an older brother, second ark, pretty good idea. I spent the first 12 years of my life in the room with Jeff Henderson. And those were some of the most oppressive years of my life. I know some of y'all have met him. Y'all think he's a wonderful guy, but 30, 40 years ago, to his younger brother, he was not. And so I can just imagine with Shem, Ham, and Japheth, second ark would be a good idea. How about we just have one where we can just kind of tow it along behind and you know, anytime we want to have some alone time. I know you might think, it's a big yacht, there's a lot of animals, but those animals start to stink after a while, and then you might have to start cleaning. And there's only one ark. The ark was large enough to hold all of those who God intended to save. He said, you bring in you and your wife and your sons' wives, and these animals that I've instructed, you bring them all into the ark. And in that ark, that one and only ark, they will find the salvation that is being given. In Hebrews chapter 11, there in verse 7, it says, by faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Noah was instructed to build only one ark, and all that the Lord had commanded him, so he did. Jesus, as we noted earlier in Matthew chapter 16, there in verse 18 it says, upon this rock I will build my church. There's just one. We need to make sure that we are in the right church. Remember, Jesus says there is one way, only through Jesus. He is the door. He is the shepherd. He is the one who leads. He is the one that has provided the way of salvation. It is only on the path laid out, that straight and narrow path that Jesus gave, that we can follow to obtain salvation. There's no other name under heaven through which we can be saved than Jesus Christ. The Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 4 says there's one body. We've already noted in the book of Colossians that that body is the church. There's one body and one spirit, just as you also were called in one hope of your calling. The one church, the church that Jesus established, not the church that man has established. It always amazed me in some of the places we lived, you would see these advertisements for these different churches, and they would say founder so-and-so. I'm like, well, there's your first clue. That's not the church that we should have anything to do with, because the founder of the church that matters is founded solely by Jesus. Founded upon Jesus. Just like the ark. The one church that was established and built by Jesus is sufficient to contain all that were saved. And the last thing we want to look at this morning is only one door. I've worked in a lot of different fields before I went into preaching, and even since I've been preaching, I've worked in a lot of different fields and deal with the safety. You have to learn the different safety measures and such for these different jobs and everything. A real important safety thing, and I've preached this to my family because I worked in these kind of areas, and it was kind of drilled in my head. You got to make sure you have the exits open, not just one, but multiple exits, and that the path is clear. And so, you know, in the house in Petal where we lived before, there was three doors into the house. And oftentimes one of them that was separate from where the other two were had stuff in front of it. I'm like, well, what if something happens? We need to get out that door. We think about the importance of multiple doors. I mean, there's what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 5 or 6 exits from this building. There was one method of entrance into the ark. In Genesis chapter 6 and verse 16, God said, you set the door of the ark in the side of it. And this door was the only path to the safety that was to be found within the ark. You oftentimes see this depicted in pictures where this big ramp there and Noah's kind of standing up there. And sometimes if it's in a kid's book, he'll have like a clipboard and he's checking off, all right, there's 2 zebras, there's 2 lions, there's 2 monkeys and such. And all these animals are coming in 2 by 2, except for the ones that are supposed to come in on pairs of 7s. And they're all coming in. And there's only that one way to go into the ark. And as you look there in the following chapter, when God, there in Genesis chapter 7, He says, you go into the ark. And they went into the ark, and the Lord shut the door behind them. The path to safety was closed. God provided one method of entrance. And once He closed the door, that was the end of a chance of salvation. The door was large enough to accommodate every animal that had to come in. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, how are you going to have a place big enough for elephants and rhinoceroses and other things? Well, they didn't have to be an adult. I mean, let's just look at that. But even if they were a full-size adult, that door was big enough for any animal to get in. And the door was open for all to enter. Think about it. Noah is described as a preacher of righteousness. He spent well over 100 years, it seems, building the ark. And it doesn't seem that Noah remained quiet in that period of time. He was someone who was telling of the judgment of God, it seems. And God is always patient, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. And no one would listen to the message. No one would receive the words that Noah was preaching. Again, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7, by faith Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Faith and obedience is necessary for salvation in the ark, and the same is true with the Lord's church. In John chapter 10, there in verse 7, Jesus proclaims himself as being the door, the one, the only door. He says to them in verse 7 of John chapter 10, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." In John chapter 14, there in verse 6, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, the life. No one comes to the Father but through me." There are a lot of individuals throughout this world and throughout history that has proclaimed a way of salvation through them, proclaimed that they could provide safety and salvation. There's only one that can do that. Only Jesus that can provide that entrance into the narrow gate. Lord willing, this afternoon we'll look some more at some of the things we find in the ark that we find to be types or shadows of the things that we can look at in the church and that reveal to us God's way. We see that, as Paul says, the things that were written beforehand were written for our understanding. And through patience and study, through giving diligent time and reading and understanding, we can come to a better comprehension of God and His desires for us. God was pretty serious with Noah. And it was a life or death matter, and the same is true with us today. God is very serious about our obedience to the gospel. He's provided a way of salvation, and it's up to us to accept that. As I mentioned, Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord, and this way of salvation was provided to him. God's grace and favor is provided to all of mankind today. If you have not obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, you can find favor in the eyes of the Lord by submitting yourself to His will. This is what Noah did. He surrendered himself to God and the things that He taught. The things that have been provided through the law given to the patriarchs, Noah followed those things. It says he was blameless. Did that mean that he did not sin? No, that meant that when he did sin, he sought forgiveness. He offered the sacrifices that were necessary. He was one who was seeking to serve the Lord. And if you're here and you need to obey the gospel, as we're about to sing, why keep Jesus waiting? Why not give yourself to Him while you have that chance, while the opportunity is there? If you've obeyed the gospel, but you've not remained steadfast and faithful, you've allowed sin to once again enter into your life, and you separated yourself from the ark, the spiritual ark built by Jesus, then why not return to Him in faithful service, seeking forgiveness? The door at this moment is still open to all who desire to come in. And we encourage you to make your life right with God as we stand and as we sing.